Welcome back to Big Sisters in STEM. My name is Jasmine, and this week we're joined by two amazing guests, Zara and Chala. Zara is an academic here at the University of Manchester. She specialises in computer graphics, and her career has been incredible so far. She's worked with Disney, DreamWorks, Lucasfilm, you name it. She's in the credits at the end of films that you'll have watched. And Chala is a third-year engineering student here at Manchester. She does civil engineering, and she specialises in kind of adapting our infrastructure to a hotter climate, which is so important. You can hear all about her dissertation in the episode. I think you're going to love this one. We've talked before about curiosity being something that really needs to be nurtured. When did your curiosity for your field start, and why do you think that was an important turning point?
So I am specializing in computer graphics, which I found an intersection between computer science and art, which I've been always interested in both. But you can imagine, as a girl growing in Iran, it was quite a different culture to study in art as a field. So it was quite a challenge for me to get into STEM when I was quite an artist myself. So this was culturally a hard decision with my background. But then I found out that you can be in STEM and be creative. I mean, this was an eye-opening concept to me, seriously. I never thought about coding and having fun. And this was true when I got into my graduate studies, and then later in my undergraduate as well, that I realized you can be a programmer, and how creativity is important. And that's how I found out my field of interest gradually, and ended up in computer graphics, which is truly my passion now. Yeah.
So when did you first make the jump from art to thinking, or realizing, I guess, that coding was a creative thing? Because I guess most people who might be an art student might not think to go in that direction. How did that come to you?
So this was not a abrupt jump. It was more of a gradual transition. Okay. And with a lot of nagging and thinking twice.
Nagging from you?
Nagging for my own decision. Okay. That I started computer engineering at the beginning, which is more similar to computer science in the UK system. And then I had a minor major in architecture, so it's an art department. So I would do their assignments, and I was very serious to actually change my undergraduate degree. But I realized I can do all the creative and fun stuff and bring it into my computer science degree. And that's how I landed peacefully in my own major in computer science. And then I went for graduate studies in the US doing purely computer graphics. So that was more of a more specialized degree later on.
So you've like traveled quite a bit really already, because you've got Iran and then you went to the US. Did you do an internship there, and then now you're in Manchester?
Yeah, talking about traveling, I started in Iran doing my undergrad at Sharif, and then I went to Turkey in Istanbul in 9 months internship project, and then I went to the US. I did 5 internships during 6 years of studying there, every summer having something on. And I also lived in Denmark for 6 months for internship.
There's a lot I didn't know about as well then.
Yeah, I've been all around the places, 14 cities in the past 11 years.
Wow, that's so nice.
Yeah.
That's inspirational.
That's inspirational with Iranian passport. You can imagine how hard it is getting visa.
Yeah.
Well, I think you've been quite unstoppable on your journey, and it really is an inspirational thing to kind of have married those two areas together as well. Chala, what was it for you? Like, your journey to civil came quite early, am I right?
Yeah. I was always interested in physics and maths, and it's also the two subjects that I was always good at because it clicked for me. That's how I always view it. And it made sense, and I liked that it did. On top of that, I had a couple of summer camps that I went to, initially introducing me to different aspects of different kinds of engineering. And the project I did with civil engineering, although at that level it was much simplified, it was the most interesting to me. And also around those ages, I'd read, there's a book called The Decade We Could Have Stopped Climate Change. And it's kind of about all the politics side of climate change and how we knew about climate change since the 80s and how different governments have basically handled the situation. And I, even though I wanted to kind of make an impact, I didn't think that it would be from, I could, from a political standpoint. Because I did like debating, I wanted to be a lawyer at some point. And
so you considered kind of two ways to make an impact?
Basically, yes. Yeah. I saw it as more of a, I could either go into the more sciencey path or, you know, the political path of drafting the laws and that side of it, but didn't think I would make a real impact like that. Just didn't see a lot happening.
Yeah, because did you consider architecture at some point as well?
Very, very briefly. Just because I knew that I didn't want to go into that kind of creative aspect of it. Just because I knew my aunt was an architect, and I saw what it did to an artist to have to kind of keep changing her designs, her babies that were basically she'd worked hours on, and she had these visions, and she had three different types of media, and she just kept getting no after no, like it's too expensive or too this or too that.
I suppose it's the other side of the fence to, if you were to be a civil engineer, you kind of collaborate together a lot.
Yeah, my grandfather also always says that as an engineer, your job is to make an architect's dreams reality. So he thinks
that's nice advice.
The engineer should find a way to make it possible.
But is that grandfather your aunt's dad?
Yes, that makes sense.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah. So he always tells me, like, if you, when you become an engineer, you need to make sure that you don't change the design, but you change how the structural design is so that you can make it become a reality. Because he says otherwise you're not a good civil engineer.
So, yeah, in terms of, you've just been talking about some people in your family who I guess were kind of good to know when you were making this journey into civil. You knew somebody who'd kind of been in an adjacent field. Do you think those kind of early experiences are quite important in having support around you and shaping, okay, this is the right option for me?
Yeah, definitely. I think not even just having perhaps someone that's in the field you want to go to, but even people who have friends in those positions. Because when you're growing up, I think you dream of all these things and they seem so far away. But having someone of that background next to you kind of makes you feel like it is reality. It grounds you more in both good senses and bad, because they can, they know all the good aspects and they're probably in love with their field, but they also know the disadvantages or, I don't know, the bad parts of their field or the parts that maybe you wouldn't be able to handle, or maybe it's not compatible with you. So I think I definitely wasted less time than a lot of people in terms of picking what I wanted to do in the future.
That's so true. That's really handy. It takes a bit of soul searching sometimes to think, where do I want to end up? Kind of as you were saying before, Zara, about navigating which way do I want to apply my skills. You've talked before about And this is a question for you, actually, Zara, about having a teacher who was a bit of a role model for you.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a moment where you thought, okay, I feel like my options are open and felt quite, I don't know, supported by her?
And Carla was talking about having a role model early on in your growing as a person. I was privileged to have my mom, who was quite courage, brave in terms of doing what she wanted to, having full-time job with four children and being always capable of whatever she thought she would. So this characteristics kind of was very important to be established early on for me to think about exploring more than one option, or even allowing myself to go for something that I'm passionate for, and rather than something that just pops up in my path. So having this characteristics, I would owe it definitely to my mom, who has passed away for 15 years ago, but still I owe everything. And
I'm sorry to hear that.
Don't worry. This is actually quite important to have, back to what you said, having supportive family in order to build a confidence as a girl growing up. And I wouldn't ever feel that I'm different from my brother, mm-hmm. or he would ever have more privileges than me. So this might be kind of hard to do in a more conservative families where mm-hmm. I'm from. So I am grateful to not being restricted, although having a lot of limitations, as if someone can assume. So building on my mom as a role model, I also had the privilege to be taught by Professor Kasai, who was a woman professor at Sharif, who taught me to be brave and dream big. So this was, again, new information to me. Oh, can I apply to the US? I don't know even speak English. So these are the out-of-box thinking that you may not see in yourself until someone ignite a very inspiring moment for you. So I do think of her as a successful woman who was also quite modest, and she was, I would see her as my own future. So it wasn't something quite different of a background. So that gave me the confidence to dream big, and I wouldn't think about it. I wouldn't get out of my comfort zone if I have never learned to do so. So that is what I liked to have, because we didn't have more than one or two women as a staff in our department, maybe, at the time that I was studying there. So this was a chance for me to see a future of my own dream.
You connected with her a bit, maybe.
She wouldn't maybe even never notice. I mean, because that's what I
do. That's so lovely, though, that she wouldn't even know how many people she's potentially inspiring. Inspired.
This is true. And what I really enjoy about my position now is that I'm teaching like 400 students in a class, and I do not know any of them closely. But I just hope to have that inspiring moment for one of them every other year, even. That would be enough for me to have this reward of my own effort. So this is not a very interactive connection that you may have, even seeing someone in TV or a podcast, that you feel, oh, why can't I? If someone have done it, why don't I try? So that's what I like about having role models early on.
Mm. Were you going to say something there as well?
I was just going to say, I like the full circle moment of how now you're teaching and you had your teacher. But also I bet that you're inspiring a lot more people than you know, because also in my family, my other grandmother is a teacher and she has many students come back like years after. Mm-hmm. And like she thought they hated them. She had classes where, like, she was very...
so strong.
She was from what I hear, teacher. Very strict. Okay. And not in a tough love way. She was just strict.
Okay.
So a lot of the years she just thought, like, she did what she thought would be good. But I'm sure you're inspiring a lot of people just by coming in and teaching every day.
Yeah, we've talked about this before as well. For me at uni, a lot of those lecturers and tutors that I really looked up to the most and I found so inspiring were often women. And it's interesting to think why that is. And we, I think, talked about this last time we had a coffee. And is there a reason that often it's women or non-binary people? Is it that connection that we have?
I think it tends to be women, because obviously if it's especially a male dominated field,
yeah,
seeing any woman succeed in it just makes you happy, I think. Also it makes you feel like you could do it. Also they create a space, whether meaning to or not, but it shows other that there is space to exist in those, yeah, places that maybe you didn't think there was space for you. But again, I think it's the making it reality, making your dreams seem effortlessly like reality. I actually saw something online, and it was a woman actually talking about how she tended not to, as she grew up, stop taking advice from successful men in her field. Also because of, in general, just family dynamics and culture, because she would talk about how she... when she usually got advice from men, the, for example, marital aspect was lacking. Mm. They didn't have children. It wasn't them who was supposed to, for example, balance the child caring aspect along, yeah, with their career.
So different considerations.
Exactly. Yeah. So when a man said, I went into the office, I don't know, working 24-hour days, 5 days a week, did everything I could, she only realized when she had a family herself that those weren't applicable to you. So I think when you see someone that's more relatable to you, who maybe could have shared the same experiences, you know that their advice means more, or,
yeah,
is more applicable to your journey and your future also.
I see what you're saying, because you have workarounds, or traditionally especially have had to do workarounds when it comes to being in that work environment, whether that's academic or an industry, that might be different to a man in the business. So I wonder if that's working harder than men, or just working in a different way, or feeling like we have to... I've felt a pressure sometimes to feel like I can show I can work exactly the same way that a man can, and I can do loads of overtime. And I can imagine that's different if you have a child or a reason that you can't be there all hours of the day. Do you think there is a sense of women just having to work differently, or think for ourselves a bit more if we don't have somebody there or hear that kind of advice, and we're having to think on our feet a bit about how we could achieve the same things with the boundaries that are already in place?
So as you said, women tend to be more successful if they get to upper social levels, but it makes them quite more vulnerable. So this makes some of the jobs for female professionals to be always at a constant judgment that people may underestimate them, that they may not get the same success as if they had gone for the other option.
So, like, if you think being a woman means other people might look at you and your success differently.
It is. So it is a very sad statistics, but apparently true, at least in our department, that we are always having a survey score for every audit lectures that we do. And in average, female lecturers tend to have a lower score, especially younger lecturers. And this says
that's a sex-wide thing, isn't it?
Sadly, it is true. I mean, yeah. I was a bit surprised, but see where it comes from. Because once you see a vulnerability in your case, then as a as a someone who is participating in the survey, they have this option to think about not having as qualified as they should. So this is kind of...
Wow, that's in the survey.
So basically the numbers says so.
Yeah.
And we were told as a female lecturer that we should take all these comments with a pinch of salt, which I try, but it is still quite, some of them quite intense. And I was once referred by he. So it's just some of them do not even, may not know what is who was the teacher of this class, but it's still some mean comments.
Why do you think it might be that women, especially young women, are perceived as being less qualified to be there? Do you think that's a societal thing?
It is. Like, if you want to go for a driver test and then you have an instructor option, then you would say, oh, maybe she wouldn't be as experienced as I want. These are like cultural stereotypes that I definitely do not agree and I definitely do not advocate. But it's just sometimes once you hear it or if you come across to it, it is sad and it is kind of, I see it quite normal because it kind of has been rooted down in the culture. What do you think? Is that true?
Yes, I think definitely there are a lot of, especially like you said, with young women, just being perceived as more juvenile, or I think it also comes with, this might just be my experience, but I tend to see that men, for example, can think in a more pessimistic way, whereas a lot of women are more optimistic. Or men call themselves realists, and then women will be optimistic.
Yeah.
And then from what I've seen, again, a lot of older women tend to be, again, more realist, more pessimistic. And sometimes optimism can be viewed as juvenile. And again, as if...
Or like people-pleasing, I guess.
Exactly. It comes from... I think it does come from aspects like that, wanting to please everyone, not offend anyone. But just because you're optimistic doesn't mean you're any less smart than any other person in the room. Just because you tend to look at things in a more positive light, or you choose to.
Well, you feel like you have to even, potentially.
So I think that aspect of, I don't know, women I think are viewed as, or compared in a lot of senses to children more than men are. Even into adulthood, women are compared or just seen more like children, I think, in a weird way.
That juvenile kind of thing you were talking about.
Yeah.
I think this is a really interesting conversation because it makes me think again about role models, but also that in having this kind of, this general knowledge, I guess, that it's a societal issue that women are seen as maybe less intelligent or experienced, even if we have exactly the same experience. It kind of puts a bit of undue responsibility on individual women.
Yeah.
That are in those positions.
It is a lot of pressure to prove yourself constantly. Otherwise, default might not be the level that you expect someone would see you.
Do you feel the pressure to kind of be a great role model because you're trying to be an active part of changing those kinds of perspectives?
So that would exactly be your last question that I kind of opened up a parenthesis in between. Because of all these... unwritten stereotypes, which are sadly not accurate. As a woman in our field, we sometimes have to overwork to just overprove. Maybe just to ourselves, even might not be ever true to someone who I work with, and they are everyone gladly open-minded nowadays. But this is something that maybe I need to prove to myself. So I would stretch myself more than what I should just to make myself a role model, as you said. And this is a pressure. This is something that we don't necessarily expect everyone to be responsible who they represent. We should be a representative of our own self, not a huge community, like 50% of the population. this is not a rational decision to make, but sometimes I do. I do feel that I would be a representative not only of my sisters in STEM, but also being a Muslim, being an Iranian, being a lot, all these labels that we just stick to ourselves, and no one even does. I mean, no one even knows that I'm on my background, but I have that inner whispering that I sometimes make it harder for me to work even harder to prove myself.
When did that kick in? Like, when did you start to think, do you have that feeling as well, Chella?
I mean, I definitely have less experiences of it than you, I'd imagine, Zahra, but I don't know. In academia, I do. Less so in university, just because the classes are larger and not everyone knows everyone's achievements and scores. I think university is more like no one... Unless you genuinely do care about your what you achieve, then you won't know about other people's, basically. You cannot know. You can live in ignorance, basically. But in academia, I did. And also in terms of applying to certain universities, what universities would be I would be accepted into, those kinds of things all throughout. Because getting to university, it was like the main goal I had for 18 years of getting into a good university. And once everyone around you is thinking like that for 18 years, there are certain expectations from teachers, from family. And that's what made me kind of have that perfectionist mindset that we talked about last week, where I felt like if I had submitted a draft, it had to be a good draft. It can be a bad draft, even though the whole point of a draft is that it's bad and you improve upon it.
You slip into perfectionism, is what you're saying. Do you think it's fair to feel to feel like a role model? I don't know if fair is even the question. It feels like a lot of weight for people to carry individually when even going through like a barrier is an achievement in itself. It feels like an undue weight, but also potentially an opportunity.
For me, up until university, I didn't feel like there were a lot of places where I could be a role model, just because of I didn't really have a platform, or not a platform, but I mean, I was just a student. I'm still just a student. But for example, doing the civil engineering ambassador talks for these past 2 years, or
because you love doing extracurricular things.
Exactly.
No, it's great, because from my perspective, as a marketing and recruitment coordinator, that's amazing, because we're always looking for ways to engage people younger and younger to explore their options. So the fact that you're always so willing to kind of come along and engage those people and say, here are your options, and this is why I think this one's exciting, it does connect with people, and it's really important.
That's why I stayed on after the first open day, because I think I talked to like a couple of people, but I truly felt like I changed a couple of people's perspective on civil engineering, just because they didn't know what it was when they first came, because it tends to be one of the oldest types of engineering. So a lot of people are, they don't know what it is, or they just think it's kind of building, bridge, concrete.
Yeah, maybe the name doesn't describe
it. I think the marketing of it is really bad.
Yeah, it needs a new name. Should we give it a new name?
We should. But I think it's because it's too general. There's too many things you can do within it. So,
but isn't that a strength?
It is. It definitely is. But then, for example, I'm doing a civil engineering degree, but I would never want to be a geotechnical engineer. That doesn't appeal to me.
So maybe someone could just hear the geotechnics and think, that is not for me.
Exactly. But then I have friends who want to go into energy, friends who want to go into finance. There's so many things you can do. So, yeah. Civil engineering is a bit weird like that.
Yeah, and your dissertation is a really interesting topic as well.
Yeah, so my dissertation is about preparing the UK for extreme heat. And I'm basically looking at urban development strategies adopted in other countries and then trying to adapt them into, or whether it would be successful in adapting into UK cities.
Yeah.
I'll be looking at.
So that's really nice, because it's very much part of that vision you had about when you first thought, oh, I really care about climate change, I really care about this changing world? What you're doing so far is really tying in with that. So young Chella would be proud,
yes, which is nice. Very happy.
You are now a role model for young Chella.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that as you grow up, you kind of want to make your younger self happy. And not just also in your career, but in like a lot of the smaller actions that you do, I think, in terms of my extracurriculars and a lot of things. I think how you talked about being a role model, usually if you don't have a role model in a certain space too, I think as you grow up, you try to be that person that wasn't there for you, if that makes sense. Like if there, if it in does, any situation yeah. where you needed someone and needed that support, but it wasn't there.
You build one.
Exactly. And you become one and you make sure that the person after you won't, they won't have that one. And maybe the person after you, they didn't need that support then, but another time. So they'll make themselves one for all these other scenarios.
I love that because, yeah, that means you yourself are your role model, which is lovely. And also what we're talking here today is to kind of provide those conversations and spaces for people that might not know somebody who has gone on to a career and is at the point that Zara, you're at now, or at university as you are, Chella, doing a STEM subject. So it's kind of nice to open up the conversation, I guess, and just, I don't, make it more available to hear about this stuff. When did you first feel, Zara, that you felt you had to be a role model? Was it uni?
I don't think I'm even close to being a role model,
but you feel the pressure. You have to because
you have a lot of labels and people, especially when you are among the minorities, and the soon you step into a room, those minorities would just stand out to you, and whatever you do, it would be just the representative of whoever, whatever you are. But what I remember about some of these, again, unfortunate stereotypes that we have in terms of a woman student or non-binary compared to the more men community as a student, I remember I was not quite confident to ask questions or just to speak up if I had any confusion from the lectures or something. And this was more of a trend in my men peers, that they are more vocal in terms of speaking. And I always tend to feel they are smart. I wouldn't even understand their question. But one interesting thing that I wanted to bring it up here is that now that I'm in a teacher position and I can tell someone's question if it's out of a confusion or is it something quite bright. I mean, I wouldn't ever judge, but just deep in my heart, I sometimes feel that to remind my younger self that, oh, you remember if you had heard the same question back in those days, I would have been depressed that, oh, this is a very smart question. But then now I remind myself just to train my own younger self that, you see, this was not a very Apollo kind of a project. This was a very reasonable question that the guy, for example, asked. So then sometimes I tend to bring more of a all the students in. So because I have my background,
you make an
myself,
effort to kind of
to
pull in,
engage
the
them
ones.
In, equally, like all the whoever is in the class, to feel interactive discussion, to not have those boss moments that I remember when I had that, oh, he's so smart, why am I not?
Yeah, so, that's interesting, like nurturing that kind of inbuilt confidence, I suppose. Do you feel that there was a moment, I don't know, when did it come to you that you thought, oh gosh, people are just feeling more confident to ask a question? It doesn't mean they know more than me. Was that when you became
I had it all the way through for my studies. Yeah, I had we had to take classes as a PhD student as well. And I remember this was even true during my courses as a PhD student. And I was in a class with my husband, actually, during my PhD. We had a class in common machine learning something. And I remember that even in that class, I felt that, oh, God, these are all men tend to be smarter. And this was not true, but I could not help myself. I would not speak up and ask a question. I was not confident. I wasn't a shy person, but I was not confident.
I had a similar experience at university when I kind of got there and I was excited to be in the space, but I felt that I knew a lot less than my peers. In the same way that I suppose, I don't know if this is the case in Iran, but here we don't study like engineering or computer science, like a discipline at A level. It's something which you have your maths and your physics and you go off to do. I was similar. I did classics. So I didn't actually get to study that at A level. I didn't go to a school which provided it, just a normal state school. And I felt really outnumbered by my peers, and they all knew how to do really in-depth things like translate Greek, and they were answering and asking questions just all over the place. And I thought, I don't belong here. And sometimes I'd make an observation and people would be like, and I felt really silly because I was just like preoccupied with talking about the emotions of mythical people. And other people were like talking about war and they knew facts and figures just completely off the top of their head. And I had that same feeling, and I now realize they just had a different background to me. They had a different education. They felt emboldened to ask those questions and that it wasn't embarrassing, whereas I would often just keep those things to myself kind of nervously. So I think that's really interesting to know that as an academic on the other side, you kind of realized it wasn't actually that way. And it's nice for young you to know that you never knew less. Yeah, do you have that, Chala, the feeling of, like, confidence? Do you have to remind yourself to ask questions and be involved in a space?
For me, for asking questions, it's never kind of been like that because I've had a lot of influences, the first being my mom and both my parents and also just the educational background I've had in general.
IB as well, which is
International Baccalaureate, so... Yeah. That kind of has the aspect of you should ask questions. You should ask questions even if it sounds stupid, and you should challenge your own beliefs and the information being given to you.
That's such a good lesson to get so early on.
It is, yeah. That's one of the reasons why I chose it. It tends to be viewed as a harder kind of option than A-levels just because you do more. But there's a specific theory of knowledge. It's not a module, it's a lesson, but you take it alongside your optional lessons that you've chosen, and you kind of look at the ways of knowing or how we gather knowledge and how, for example, in physics, I don't know, you can't prove a theory, but you can only disprove theories, or how is knowledge attained in math, or how is it in religion, because you also look at that. And it's especially interesting seeing a lot of people from, I don't know, STEM backgrounds or people in the school where it's usually competitive and they're very factual, having to debate about how faith is a way of knowing too. So I never really had a problem with asking questions. But like I said, I also had one teacher in that school during International Baccalaureate too, actually. One of them... about your question where you said, oh, people ask questions and it's just kind of to lift themselves up. I mean, I kind of noticed sometimes people doing that, but not all the time. And I also thought a lot of people in my classroom are really smart people. But I had my teacher, I don't know if this is a good teaching strategy, but he would call them out. He would tell them, that doesn't make sense. Did you mean to ask that? Because if you knew about it, you wouldn't be asking.
That's so bold.
Yeah, he was a very direct teacher. And if you tried to say things to, I don't know, compliment him or just try to be closer to him, he'd go, no. He hated that.
Really?
He absolutely hated it. And he would call you out in front of everyone for it. And he was one of the people that kind of made me realize, wait a minute, okay. Because when you don't know a lot about the subject, you obviously, when someone says something like a complicated word, you're like, okay. Mm. And then I had another teacher. She was quite nice. But she was the most important thing that I remember about her. She was very smart. And she gave me like 3 bits of advice, but I will keep them for the rest of my life. Just because she thought asking questions was always important and that you should challenge her. She didn't like when we accepted the information she gave us either. Mm. So by the time I came to university, I was quite confident in questioning people.
That's so good. Yeah. It's really good advice in general for everyone as well. I feel as well that it's the opposite of what a lot of people are raised with, kind of you can be seen but not heard. Mm-hmm. And that it's rude to talk back or question kind of your superiors, whether that's a teacher or parents. So I really like having that insight into that way of thinking at such an early age. That must be so useful.
I mean, don't get me wrong, my mom and dad have stories of horror stories of us like being on the roads and me just like kind of going, why? Like, you just wouldn't shut up.
But that's why you're now going into engineering.
Yeah, but even though they joke about it, they always answered my questions. So, yeah.
Speaking of having a heat wave in the UK, I'm not seeing that coming. But well, we've just sorry, I got cold a bit.
So we're kind of getting from Alice in the team 2-minute signals. So before, just to wrap up, I thought it would be nice, and we've kind of been talking about it already, to be honest. So feel free to reiterate a point you've already said. But yeah, I just wanted to end with getting from both of you, like a piece of advice that you would have given your younger self, maybe 5 years ago, who something that might better prepare younger you for what's happened since that time.
I would tell myself, dream big. This is what I love about life. I may have ended up a different life if I had stayed in Iran. I moved out after my undergrad. And dream big, be brave, go for passion. Don't be afraid to love what you do. We may sometimes think that having a job is just to make money. It shouldn't. You can enjoy and you can find what you meant to do and think out of the box. That's and
lovely.
Yeah, I love it. I love it to just always think we can, when we're dreaming, we can dream big and there's no ceiling effect.
I love that piece. So
kind of tying into your advice, but kind of being the opposite side of the coin. Dream big, apply to those things that scare you, that you think there is absolutely no way will I get this position, will I get this internship, and get rejected. Maybe you will get rejected 100 times, maybe 50 times. But on that 51st, maybe on that 101st, you might. And unless you apply, then you're the person that's rejecting yourself before they even have a chance to reject you. My mom always said, don't be the person. Because let them have the chance to at least reject you, even if they are going to. And also kind of putting in a statistic of women tend to apply for positions that they are not qualified for. If they view that, for example, they don't have that specific Excel qualification, they tend to not apply, women and non-binary people, but men tend to. And there are a lot of men in a lot of positions that didn't match the job description, but they applied because they had the confidence to. So have that confidence, apply, and maybe get rejected, but apply.
I got goosebumps.
I love it.
That's very nice. To never, never give up. Yeah.
I love that. Go for it. So that's everything for today. Thank you for listening and see you next time.
Thank you for having us.